said I'm sorry.
To the Church of Mavis, everyone. I have an announcement to make. Guy Rettel is not with us tonight. He's in the hospital. He apparently hurt his leg, bumped it somehow, and because he's a diabetic, he is laid up in the hospital with an infection in his leg. He has pictures of his leg on his profile on Facebook. It looks pretty rough, but I believe he's going to be okay. He just needs some more time in the hospital. I'm not sure when he's coming back. Hopefully next weekend, but I don't really know for sure. Him being diabetic and then his leg messing up is just, caused some problems for him. And he definitely will be back. Just not sure exactly when. Someone asked me if he was going to lose his leg. No, I'm pretty sure he's not. And Guy Rettel's a tough bastard, so even if he did, he would stick a pirate wooden keg in it, like a pirate, and keep going. But he's not going to lose his leg. It's healing. So, keep him in your prayers. And, put prayer requests out so he can have a swift recovery and come back to the show. And as for me, I went to the doctor a few weeks ago. My first checkup in 20 years. I'm a cancer survivor. I hate doctors. The last time I went to a doctor, they took my testicular cancer, so I avoided doctors for like 20 years. So I finally went to one and they did all these blood tests. I'm supposed to know Tuesday if I'm croaking or not. I don't think I am. I just went really for, just to make sure I was okay. There's nothing immediate happening to me health-wise or anything, but I'll know Tuesday if I'm croaking or not. So a lot of nervous energy in there. I'm worried about Guy, and then I'm waiting for blood tests to find out if I'm croaking or not, which I'm pretty sure I'm not, but you don't know until you go in there and they stick you down and tell you the blood test stuff. So keep me in your prayers as well, and I just want Tuesday to freaking get here, and when I won't die to heal so we can, get things back on the road. Right now I'm feeling like a couple of grandpa poopy pants, all this medical stuff going on, you know what I'm saying? So tonight we have Joe Montana sitting in for Mr. Whale. So, pleasure to have Joe here with us. That helped balance out my nervous, freaky energy because I'm just nervous about all this stuff with Guy and myself. Guy even more so. And tonight's guest is Lynn Kasten. We're going to be talking about exopolitics and his book, The Secret History of Extraterrestrials. So, are you there, Joe?
Yeah.
Is Joe there with us?
Who's this Joe guy? This is Guy, man. This is Guy's new improved sexy voice. I don't know what you're talking about.
Guy had a voice transplant and he's back and he sounds like Yo-Yo.
That's right. Sexy guy now. See, he's got the good voice now, you know. Anyway, guys, how y'all doing? I'm just hanging out. I come to hang out with you every night, see what's up. I'm hanging around the house, not doing that. Just doing a little producing, as usual. Been kind of waiting since Jeff asked me earlier today. I always like talking with him because he's crazier than I am. And by the way, Jeffrey, only the good die young, so you ain't got nothing to worry about. 100 years from now, maybe, but you know.
That's right. That's what I'm talking about. It's Saturday night. Saturday Night Live. We're here at the Church of Mavis, and we have our guest, Lynn. Are you there?
Yes, I am, right here.
All right. Well, first off, I want to explain my situation with exopolitics, and I want you to chime in, Lynn, and then I want Joe to chime in. First off, I know a little bit about exopolitics. I don't know a lot about exopolitics. I know the basics, even that. I don't understand exopolitics. I guess what I don't understand about it is how are people making all of these decisions based on extraterrestrials influencing humanity and politics and all this stuff without not actually meeting the extraterrestrials and sitting down with them? Are they channeling it? Are they just basing it on reports? I guess I'm trying to understand exopolitics. So if you could just, Lynn, fill me in a little bit, and then we'll let Joe go to town.
Well, according to my information, it was Michael Sala who first coined the term in 2000 and, let's see, I believe it was 2003 in his book about exopolitics. Although Alfred Lambermont Weber also wrote a book about exopolitics around the same time, but I believe Michael Sala's was the first. That's my understanding. It basically has to do with the fact that since the most people who have investigated this the situation, conclusion that we are dealing with extraterrestrials all over the world, that we need a word to define the nature of our negotiations with them, and exopolitics fits the bill with that. It's just saying that this is the kind of politics that we practice when dealing with extraterrestrials. So, but your question is, where does this take place and how does it actually happen? That's a very big subject, okay? And in the book, I make some references to that in my chapter on chapter 9, Exopolitics and the Iraqi Stargate. So basically, it's a word that defines the fact that we are now dealing with extraterrestrials on a major scale, and we need to acknowledge that. That's all.
All right, Joe.
As you know, I sit on Michael Sala's Exopolitical Advisory Board. I'm actually close and dear friends with Alfred Weber and Stephen Bessett. The thing is, for me, is these are three different things. Michael Sala's exopolitics is different than Alfred Weber's is. Stephen Bessette's in a whole different thing. He's definitely considered exopolitics. Stephen, I guess we'll just say he's part of the disclosure movement. And by the way, while I'm on that, the disclosure petition is up. Go over to it and sign it. You can find it linked on all three of my major sites, Animal Radio, iCar, and UFO Aliens, and I mean UFO on the cover. You can go right there, click it. Last I checked, it was up over 3,000 signatures. Steve was hoping 5,000 by October 22nd. I think he's going to get that before the end of the weekend. But get over there, get the petition signed, get notice, let people know we are interested. But for me, you know, Stephen, because, you know, he is a big part of exopolitics. He's the movement now. He's the one with exopolitics Hawaii. He's the one with all the exopolitics overseas. He's the real center cornerstone to exopolitics these days. I agree with what Lynn said. Michael Sala is really the one who founded this, but Michael Sala, when I interviewed him, I've interviewed him about 9 times. About 14 times, actually. And the thing about it is they view this a little bit different. Him and Alfred were looking for a way to set up a formal contact different than, like, the abductees or anything like that. They wanted a formal petition, a formal line of adage for contact, for first legitimate contact is what they're talking about. They're not talking about all the contact, these are the contact. I don't want anybody to get offended because we've been making contact for a long time. What they're talking about is a public form of contact. They want this out in the open, and they want it done with a set of criteria. Matter of fact, you can hear it in their own words. Both him and Alfred are on many, many shows. You can actually go listen to it in their own words and hear how they're saying it, because they say it much better than I do. But that's really what they were after. My problem was with this always was the same thing. That's why I'm on the board, is for the contact. They've made contact. ET's not really interested in setting up a formal line of contact and that, because they would have done it a long time ago. They work with the government somewhat, but they really don't give a blank about the government all that much. There's an agenda here, actually. There's several agendas here, and the key parts of this to remember is there's a human race. We're part of the agenda. We're not the whole agenda. So you can throw extra politics in there, and what Alfred and Michael's doing and what Steven's doing, and I really do have to say this officially on the air. I keep Steven Bissett and Alfred Brother and Michael Sala's exopolitics separate in my mind, because to me it's two and a half.
Well, Steven picked up the ball and ran with it and made it,
yeah,
and made it an international movement, whereas Sala's is more of the academic approach to it. Sala's formal definition is as follows. He says exopolitics, quote, can be defined as the policy debate over the choices governments and populations need to make in formulating and implementing legislative and policy responses to the presence of ETs in human affairs, unquote. Now, you notice that he's putting the emphasis here on the choices that humans make. He's not saying anything at all about how the aliens might respond. So it's a human-oriented movement, and how the aliens will respond, of course, is always a question mark.
Kind of a scary question mark at that, too, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Well, sometimes, I see Alfred Weber, he's like, the Andromeda Council is going to banish the reptilian influence from yada, yada, yada. Sometimes I see some of the exopolitics people get a little weird. I guess that's where my concern is.
That word weird is getting very more and more vague as we down this road. And what's weird and what's not weird is the line is getting very blurred there between those two.
Hmm. That's true. But as far as exopolitics and reptilians, they seem to be the bad guys of exopolitics. Is that the common consensus of everyone in exopolitics, that the reptilians are here to do evil?
The commonly accepted concept here is that there is a group of reptilians that have been working for a long time with what we call the Illuminati, that is to say the elite on this planet, and that the elite are carrying out the agenda, whether they know it or not, and some know it and some don't, of this reptilian group. And that would include a group within our military. So the fact that there is no real exopolitical relationship with them in the sense of a formal connection with them is really more of an esoteric or a hidden relationship with the reptilians. But yes, there is a form of exopolitics being conducted with the reptilians, for sure. No secret.
Well, definitely, you know, there's a lot of, just the reptilian word in a lot of circles. People are, you know, it's like they're labeling an entire species as evil on some level. I jokingly said that the reptilians seem like the new Jews, you know, as far as the way people are labeling them. Like, those reptilians, it's like I saw Laura Eisenhower recently saying, we've interviewed her before, mixed feelings about what she represents, but she said something to the effect of, now we're really getting under the reptilian skin. And it seems like, you know, like, I can't sit back and think that a whole race of reptilians are evil, so you're saying it's specific, like, factions that are possibly evil and influencing mankind in a negative type way.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I think the one we're talking about is the group that originated on Alpha Draconis. And if you read my book, you will recall that I did connect the reptilians with the Nazi movement. I did make that connection that the Nazis had made an agreement with them and basically were getting helped by the reptilians, but really they were acting as reptilians. They were acting as straw men for the reptilians because the real agenda was to take over the planet. The entire fascist movement was basically based on a reptilian agenda, according to what I've been determined.
So, Joe, what is your view on the reptilians as far as, do you think there's a Nazi connection? Do you think they're all evil?
Well, there's a couple things. It's funny for me because reptilians always get a bad rap. They're probably one of the older visitors of the planet. If you go, you can find them in every ancient culture that is on the planet. But what's funny is the reptilians don't become bad until modern era, just in the last 200 years. Every other ancient culture on the planet worships them. They think they're gods. They think, matter of fact, all the Mesoamericans, they're the bearers of life. They're the ones that bring life. The human-type gods are the evil ones. So not until just recent times did they start to get a bad rep. And when you talk to contact, even abductees, and probably I've talked to 600 or 700 that have had contact with reptilians, they don't talk like that. They don't talk like they're all bad vicious. There are some, though. And it needs to be made a distinction because there are a few out there that really are just kind of mean. It's part of the way their system works. And they're only abducting family lines anyway. A reptilian won't even abduct outside of a family line. So if they're abducting someone, it's because somewhere back in the past 10, 15, 20,000 years ago, it was part of the original inbreed. It might have even been 200,000, 300,000 years ago. But that's the only reason they're even messing with them. They don't really care about anything else. It's about our species. They think we live on their planet. It always cracks me up that humans think we're native to this planet, and that the dominant form of life would have been born on land and not in water. First off, true reptilians are amphibians, so they can live in both. And you go all the way back to the Dogon for those, and the Egyptians, and the Mesoamericans. Here you have a race that's born and bred to live on this planet. They live both in water and land. The true species would actually be able to use the water, since the planet is, after all, 78% water. So you have to kind of wonder about us. Our average biological clock is set to 24 and a quarter hour days. Of course, Earth's set to 23 and a quarter hour days. So, you know, for the reptilians, it's a much different beast. Humans don't belong here. This isn't their planet.
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is that none of us really belong here. Humans.
Not
really,
I agree.
According to the research I've done, we're from a different place as well. The reptilians may have been here before us, but now they constitute a small underground colony that I believe is supposedly about 200 miles down. And yes, they do claim to be the native population, but you know, we've been here a long time too. And yes. Who owns the planet? I mean, we're all visitors here, basically.
Yeah. We own by numbers right now. There's a sheer 7 billion of us. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless they're going to wipe us all out, you know. And it is a good argument about who's who and who's not. But, you know, we found that a lot of reptilians, that's actually quite a few on the water basis. Most people don't realize it. But the reptilians, most of the reptilians are a lot like us. Actually, when you listen to the contactees, they're the closest thing to humans except for the way they look. Their attitudes are like ours. Their hierarchies are like ours. They do have religions. They are a lot like our species, and we do share a common ancestor way back when the Sumerians, when the first human aliens and the reptilian aliens interbred with the slave race. That's what the race that's alive today. That's us. We share that DNA. We all have a reptilian section in our brain. That's part of who we are today. They're the ones, matter of fact, even in the Christian Bible, they're the ones that brought us self-awareness. Eve bit the apple. What was the first thing she did? Oh, my God, she put clothes on. Why? Because she was self-aware now. She was awake and alive and going, what the hell is going on here? And this story, actually, the Sumerian, and repeats in every culture that's ever lived on this planet.
Well, we do have reptilian genetics involved, but those genes were contributed by benevolent group of...
Yeah, more benevolent race, they were.
Reptilians under the direction of a far higher power than they... Because our race is totally new. It's totally new, and the reptilians did definitely contribute towards it. But they were really the good guys in those days, and things have changed.
Yeah, that's true. That's what I'm saying. They were always revered in the past. In recent times, because of the few bad ones running. See, we found this out a long time ago. There's a rogue group of aliens running around. It's not just reptilians, by the way. There's a rogue group of greys, reptilians, and there's even some of them ass human types, which are the worst. By the way, So everyone understands that out of all three of the major races that abduct people on this planet, the human race is by far the nastiest. They get a lot
by
of good
by the way, according to my information, the reptilians really do not abduct. They're not into the abduction thing.
Well, you're wrong about that. We got a questionnaire coming out about that. It'll be out in about 3 weeks. Right now, to date, we've probably got somewhere in the 3,000 to 5,000 range in reports on reptilian abductions. And that's minimum. That's minimum amount we've got. But there'll be something coming out. Matter of fact, it's funny this came up in this conversation tonight because just before the show, my Oregon State Director wrote to me, November Hansen, and told me, she said, I'm going to be finishing up the reptilian questionnaire in the next week or two, which she does fantastic work, by the way. It's a comparison study is what it is on all the, all the stuff that's same and different amongst these abductions. So that's what I'm saying. There's more than one reptilian group here. And like I said, one's definitely an amphibian race. The other is probably more of a true reptilian race.
Let me just say this real quickly. And in the past, I had a reptilian experience, and I saw reptilian-type beings. And I've had a lot of different alien-type experiences to where I remember seeing a being of some sort, and then I don't remember anything afterwards. Like, I can just remember seeing the beings, and then if I try to remember anything else, I can't remember a thing. So, I mean, I wondered if I've been taken before, but I don't really know. But there's definitely, I've written several articles about me seeing beings, but it's like anything after that, it's like I see them, I don't remember a thing afterwards, like ever. Like, I just read an article recently called, down on Bermuda Street, and it was about some stuff that happened to me in Georgia on Bermuda Street, and it's like I could remember seeing the beings and the UFOs and the neighbors seeing the UFOs, but after that, just a pure blank, nothing. So I always wonder if I was sucked up and I just don't remember anything, or I don't know, but I definitely, I've had a reptilian experience. It wasn't negative, it seemed positive, but it was definitely bizarre. No doubt about that. But, Lynn.
I think the reptilians that Alfred Weber talks about are the Dracos or the ones from Alpha Draconis. He makes reference to the Orion, the alliance between the Orion Greys and the Draco reptilian underground bases, which I guess there are quite a few of them. And it's, my understanding is that this was the group that allied themselves with the Nazis during World War II. This movement. So there are other. I'm sure there are other reptilian subraces or groups that are benevolent, but you know, I don't know the whole story.
So the reptilians, is there any correlation, let's say, Joe, with the theory about dinosaurs surviving the cataclysm that killed them all and them evolving in the reptilians? Is there any tie into the reptilians at all from that kind of weird reptoid type theory?
You know what's weird about that is this one thing that's always fascinated me, and most ufologists don't want to talk about it. The map of the creator. You can find it. It's still listed in Russia, and it's a legitimate archaeological find. Nobody argues about it. It's off infinity. Nobody just knows how it can exist. It dates back 120 million years. It's a cover stone. It's an aerial resource map that dates back 120 million. That's physically impossible. There's no humans on this planet 120 million years ago. There weren't no humans on this planet 20 million years ago. So there was a race here long, long before we were here. More than likely, it may have evolved here, it may not. It may have come here from another planet because, you know, Earth is a lush planet after all. It may have come here. It may have settled here for a long time when the meteor had to leave and then came back, or maybe it buried underground and then came back later on. Regardless, when it came back, it found us and then interbred with us. I don't know if the human aliens put us here, because the Sumerians said the human aliens brought us here, created us as a slave race, and the reptilians stole their women and created the race that's here today. So, I mean, it's actually in our ancient history. You can go read that for yourself. So, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, but knowing that map exists, and knowing no one's ever been able to debunk the map ever, and it's in a legitimate museum, you got to kind of wonder. Maybe the race actually did evolve on this planet and then left. And regardless, even if they evolved here, I got to agree with Lynn on this, even if this race evolved here, the planet doesn't belong to them anymore. They left. And if they came back and helped us out, It's still our planet today. We live here today, all 7 billion of us. And, you know, look, you want to live here? Come talk to us face-to-face. Maybe we can exchange some technology for Australia or something, you know. But it's not going to work any other way. I don't think the rest of the aliens are just going to let anybody wipe us all out. So I think we're at an impasse. High water, some subductions.
I think there are forces way beyond the reptilians that are taking care of us and running
the
world.
But the light beam.
And non-intervention is the name of the game. Although, according to Weber, some of the good, benevolent extraterrestrials have decided that they do have to step in at this point to free us from the kind of enslavement that we're basically living under. Basically, indebtedness is a form of slavery, and we're basically all in a state of slavery. And there is a liberation going on slowly here that really transcends anything that the reptilians are doing. So how that's going to all turn out, nobody knows at the present time.
Okay, Lynn, the subtitle of your book is Advanced Technology and the Coming of the New Race. What do you mean by the coming of the new race?
Well, I discussed the entire what's called the hybrid project in my book, and I don't know if you read that part or not. Did you? Did you read that part?
Yes.
You do know that hybrids are being created, have been for many years, between the Greys and humans. They've been created since, I think, at least 20 years. They've been involved in the hybrid project. Dr. Mack talked about it in his book, and I think Jacobs talked about it, and Bud Hopkins all talked about it. It's a fact that hybrids are being created. Now, the aliens will claim that this is going to be the new race, that they're going to have telepathic capabilities, they're going to be more spiritual than we are, and they're going to make the planet into a utopia. However, I make the point in the book that really the human race in and of itself is developing superhuman qualities that will eventually mean that there will be a superhuman human race on the planet without the necessity of genetic tinkering through hybrids. So that question as to what the future of the human race is remains a question mark.
Joe, earlier you said something to the effect of light beings. I've had experiences with light beings before, and I've heard shamans speak of luminescent beings. Who are these light beings? Are they us without our bodies? Are they the angels of Jehovah? Who are these light beings? What are they? Are they the force that's protecting us? What do you know about the light beings?
I think that my understanding is the only connection I have with light beings has to do with the Andromedans. Supposedly, the Andromedans can just appear in light as an orb of light. Also, the Arcturians have that capability. It's basically the basic spiritual essence of these entities who can manifest in physical form if they want to. But they're just so far ahead of us, perhaps thousands, could even be millions of years, that they no longer need a physical body, but they can manifest one if they need to.
Joe, are you there? What do you think about the light beings?
Oh, it depends. Well, it depends what you're talking about, light beings. You're talking about the ones the Greys work for. You're talking about an ancient race that comes from another galaxy that came here and settled this one down. When they found it, what I understand, it was a complete mess. Everybody was fighting with everybody, and there is evidence of that with the Greys, reptilians, and humans. It's always funny to me, because everybody always talks about the Greys being these little guys. Well, the Greys abduct 10 to 1 more than everybody else does. It's easy to prove that. But the thing about it is if a human alien's present or a reptilian alien's present, they give way to the Greys. The Greys use an organic technology, and they're the ones that say the light beams are the head of the council, and that's who they work for. And technically, they consider the Greys the overseer. They're like the police force more than they are anything else. But the human-type aliens, everybody forgets about Hitler's book, Blonde Comet. He's talking about the reptilians, but Hitler describes two fair-haired, blonde-haired, blue-eyed angels that came to him and told him how to do all these genetic experiments. We know the human aliens do those types of experiences. And here you have Hitler telling you that he was talking to him. In his own words, he's telling you this. So for me, it's a much different beast. We go strictly by evidence based from all the contactees we research with, which is 10,000 plus these days. So for us, it's a much different thing. When we're talking about different beings, we're talking about them based on, you know, from compiled of many, many, many contactees. And the light beings just seem to be that, a very advanced, energy-based life form. Way more advanced than anybody else around here. They're not gods. I don't want people... There's a spiritual aspect to them. I don't want to take that away from this. If we're doing this scientifically, yes, there's some kind of matter, energy, but a plasma, I don't know what you want to call it, and they're very advanced, and they can take any shape they want. And from what I can understand, they can travel through space without ships. They don't need that kind of stuff. And for probably the average person, if you've seen one and experienced one, it would kind of be like a godlike thing, but they're not gods. They're just really, really, really advanced. And they do have an interest in keeping peace in this galaxy. They want it kept. And you know, they're going to keep it. I'm telling you what, it wouldn't be so great. Earth would be a battlefield between the reptilians and the humans. And I'm not sure who would be benefactors. I don't even know if anyone would even care we were here then. Because there was some pretty harsh stuff. Most people don't make the mistake that when they get into this field, they don't start when we started. You have to go back and find the first written text and work your way forward to really truly understand what goes on in all of this. I mean, it's one of the first things we tell new investigators. You have to start in the past and work your way forward. You'll never understand it because the Sumerians, the Egyptians, the Dogon, the Aborigines, the Mesoamericans, everyone's talked about these three groups in great detail. But here's a kicker for you. The three major species in the beginning, you have the Babylonians, the Egyptians, and the Sumerians. None of them mention the Greys. Right at the very fall of the Egyptian Empire, there's a mention of the Greys, but not before then. So what it seems like is the humans and reptilians were here, and they were having issues with each other when all of a sudden the Greys appeared. And most people think these three Greys. There's two varieties of three-foot Greys, and at least 9 or 10 other varieties of Grey. They get as tall, well, the queen's probably around 9 foot, but the rest of them, they get as tall as 7 foot, so... It's not what most people think, and it's a shame. Go ahead, Lynn. Yeah, I'm just babbling there.
Yeah, I agree entirely with that. But you think the thing about when you think about the Sumerians and the Babylonians is the fact that they introduced the whole concept of slavery. Slavery really began then, and the reason for that was that the controlling races, which I think was reptilian based, used the humans as slaves, and slavery just came down through the ages. Because of that reptilian influence, it took on different forms in the U.S. During the Civil War. It took on the form of the blacks versus the whites. But the concept of slavery, I think, is an extraterrestrial concept, and I think it's connected with the reptilians. And really, it manifested outwardly during World War II, when really World War II essentially was an attempt to enslave the entire planet. It was an overt attempt to enslave the entire planet. And if the fascists had won, that would be the case right now.
Yeah, we'd all be vitile reptilian or human or something, something like that. You're right. And you know, I never really thought about the slavery thing, but that's a damn good point because that is when it started. That is the causes it started with, and they were definitely slaves or aliens in the beginning. So we just emulated our masters, which makes total sense to me.
Yeah.
All right, so Lynn, if you could, let's get into the advanced technology, and let's start off with the Iraqi Stargate. What is that technology, and what race of beings does that technology revolve around?
Well, I think we've had Stargate technology for at least about 50 years. I think we've had it since certainly the Montauk Project. If you know, have you had Andrew Bisaggio on your show yet?
No.
Okay, well, you know, he claims to have been teleported to Mars, teleported to the future through the Stargate technology that the military possesses. And that particular chapter that you're talking about is based on the belief that a native Stargate did exist in Iraq, which was ancient Babylonia. And that part of the reason for the Iraqi invasion was to get our hands on that Stargate and to prevent any species coming through that Stargate that we didn't want here. And Michael Sala takes that position and says that that if we hadn't done that, that the aliens would have come through the Stargate in Iraq and bolstered the regime of Saddam Hussein, and that would have been the end of our influence in the Middle East. We would have lost all of that oil. So Sala laid that out in detail in his essays on his website, and I reported it in my interview with Sala. But William Henry also talks about that, and he makes a very good case for it.
Well, has anyone tried to build these Stargates? I mean, if they're getting, you know, if there's an Iraqi Stargate, it seems like humans can pretty much, you know, build anything they want just about if they have something to look at, a template, so to speak. Has anybody, to your knowledge, tried to reconstruct the Stargate on that level?
According to Andrew Bisaggio, who claims that he was involved in Project Pegasus when he was younger, he has been put through a Stargate several times into the future. He actually was sent to and to the past, and he was actually sent back to the time of Lincoln and actually witnessed the Gettysburg Address. He claims to have been to the year 2045. So, you know, the military does have the Stargate technology. I think that's been pretty much agreed upon by many people. We have the ability in Montauk. They had a Stargate in Montauk. And supposedly one exists in Giza. And I don't know if it's being used, but it has been discovered in Giza. So Stargates, the ability to teleport does exist. And apparently we do have that ability to use them.
Well, I know in your book you mentioned Star Trek and some Hollywood-type things. Do you think, is the government trying to prepare humanity in some way through entertainment for some kind of announcement on some level? And also, I guess this is a two-part question on some level. With the recent petition from Stephen Bassett, which I actually recently put an article in my Examiner called, "Will signing a petition for UFO disclosure make a change?" I put no, but sign it anyway. I just had a hard time accepting that the government cares what we want to, you know, learn from them as far as if they get this petition, is it really going to make them say, "Oh, we have 5,000 people here who want to know the truth, so we're going to come forth and tell them everything." I guess I just don't trust our government enough to care about us that much. I mean,
yeah, I agree.
It's pretty epic.
I agree.
20 million, maybe.
The numbers don't matter. Nothing's going to convince them to do it. That disclosure that takes place in the United States, and by the way, we're lagging behind the rest of the world already because disclosure has already been made in England, Brazil, France, and four or five other countries. We're the ones that are holding out, but nothing's going to convince this group that runs the government to disclose if they choose not to. It's really in the hands of the extraterrestrials at this point. They're the ones that have to make that decision because our government is never going to do it because they would have to admit to too many other things that they don't want to admit to, namely some of the new technologies that the free energy technologies that we already have. They don't want to talk about that.
You know, Lynn, it's interesting because when I first met Stephen Bassett, I said, "You're going to have to give the government something for disclosure." And he's like, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, think of it from this point of view." I said, "We deal with thousands of contactees." I said, "The day the government admits that aliens are real, every one of them are going to sue the government, every one of them, for letting them." I said, "You're talking hundreds of millions." I said, "That's just the start." I said, "Then we've got the religious factions that are just going to freak for a while, not including a lot of other stuff that's going to go on." I said, "It's not beneficial for the government to come forward."
Absolutely.
You're going to have to give them something, you know. And frankly, you know, I just don't see it as a species at whole. I mean, I think long-term we should have disclosure, but So where society is today, I'm not sure it's even the best thing for us. In some ways, I think it would help unite the planet, but in some ways, at least initially, I think it's going to cause a major amount of chaos amongst the less educated and the more moronic religious people. I can't see that. I see little stuff today that causes these same problems. It's not even something as major as this. We're going to be threatening a lot of people's gods when we bring in extraterrestrials, especially... Absolutely. Yeah, especially some of the old gods, because we're going to know they were extraterrestrial.
I just don't see it. We're going to get that devil came down here from the Antichrist. We're going to shit in the face. Yeah, people are going to do a witch hunt with these beings. Not everyone, but the crazy ones. No doubt about it.
I tell you what, E.T. always says. E.T. always says the same thing. We're disclosing to everybody we think needs to know. So, you know, like, get on the rest of the world mode. Like, whatever, y'all don't need to know. We don't care about y'all.
I think Stephen's
grassroots.
I think part of Stephen's movement is that we need to include amnesty in disclosure.
I agree.
There definitely would not be disclosure without an amnesty agreement.
Oh, I agree.
Otherwise, all these guys would go on trial at The Hague and be found guilty immediately. So... amnesty is a huge part of this thing. A lot of these people, of course, are dead already, but the ones that are still contributing to the cover-up are not going to allow it because the fact that they're going to ask for amnesty, for sure.
You know, it's interesting because I've talked to a couple of politicians about this, and they said, you know, we would love to be able to say, okay, we'll give everybody amnesty if you'll tell us the truth. He said, but the problem is, most conscious-minded politicians are not going to do that because some of the crimes that may have been committed should never be given amnesty. And so there's a big argument there. How can you do that? Because really later on, we're going to find out some horrific stuff was done by people that should never be given them or forgiven. So I don't know how they're going to deal with that.
It's a tough thing.
And we've been lying so long that short of E.T. just saying, look, enough is enough, I don't think we're going to get to the truth. Well, I've endorsed Stephen. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, why you listen to the three of us? Everybody here wants this to happen. And I agree with Stephen, and I work every day. I bring him on my shows. I give him all the press I can give him. I've got him on all my websites because I want to see it happen. But being a researcher myself and being in the field and understanding this in the way I do, I can't see why the government would want to come forward.
Well,
Obama ain't going to disclose, nobody is.
Exactly. And there have been murders. There have been all kinds of horrible crimes have been committed in the name of this cover-up. So they're certainly not going to do it without amnesty. And as Stephen has touched on that subject, I don't know if it's part of his disclosure movement.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he agrees. I mean, I've heard him say it many times that if we're going to have disclosure, we're going to have amnesty. And he's right. We are. I just don't. I mean, we have to have some kind of formal limited amnesty or something.
I really applaud what Stephen's doing, and I think he's raising the consciousness. He's raising the consciousness in a big way. And even if he doesn't succeed in getting the disclosure, at least he will have accomplished a lot of consciousness raising all over the planet, which is fantastic.
There's a quote in your book that goes back to the subject of movies in this subject from Steven Spielberg. It says, I really found my faith when I learned that the government was opposed to the film, meaning Close Encounters of the Third Kind. If NASA took the time to write me a 20-page letter, then I knew there must be something happening. So I do think that I don't think the government's trying to make people, you know, aware of these beings, but maybe the beings are using certain people to get the message across. Like, let's say, for instance, you know, Steven Spielberg. I mean, he had a letter from NASA that was trying to make him apparently not to do the movie Close Encounters, right, Lynn?
Well, there are some very important people in government that want to get this information out and have been trying to get it out through Hollywood. And Spielberg, I think, has been part of the so-called public acclamation program, which is slowly acclimate to it and get it out even in the form of fiction, such as movies of Star Wars and Close Encounters. But Close Encounters was really about the Serpo adventure, where we sent 12 people to the planet Serpo. And that was what that particular movie was about. Spielberg revealed that information in 1977, whereas the astronauts had not even returned from Serpo until 1978, so he was way ahead of the game in getting that information out. But the movie was exactly coincides with the nature of the program, which was revealed in 2005. So I devoted a chapter in the book to that whole story.
Well, most of the new movies now are, you know, aliens are coming to eat us and harvest our souls and whatever. I mean, he seems to have a more positive view on it and a kind of, I don't know, more of a divine kind of view of contact as a mystical kind of experience, you know, to be in awe of, not, you know, aliens coming to harvest your brains.
Well, let's face it. If they're using Spielberg as part of the public acclimation program, and he's willing to do it, it's because he believes that the aliens are benign, and because they've convinced him that the aliens are benign, and they wanted to slowly get us accommodated to accepting them, because they look kind of grotesque according to our standards of beauty and attractiveness. So that's basically. I mean, the ET was a grotesque looking creature, but because he had a heart light and was compassionate, you know, it changed our whole attitude about him. And I think that's maybe what they're asking Spielberg to do and he's agreeing to do, probably because he believes in that whole concept.
And I noticed recently with J.J. Abrams and Steven Spielberg's last movie, Super 8, they kind of made the alien not as ET-like friendly. He was friendly to the children, but
I know.
The enemy.
Yeah, exactly. That was a whole different
thing.
Yeah, he made a grotesque, very horrible-looking creatures. This was not very Spielbergian and a little surprising, actually, although he did take that same approach in War of the Worlds. So I think War of the Worlds represents a shift in Spielberg's attitude. I'm not sure why or how, because up to that point they were very human-looking and very civilized, really, the aliens were. So things seemed to change with the War of the Worlds.
Yeah, and then, you know, recently Steven Spielberg's Fallen Skies, that was just the aliens were completely just terrifying. I saw the first season of that. It was okay. It was better than most trash on TV, but basically these spider-like gray aliens came down and started harvesting children and using them as slaves, and then it turned out as the season developed that they were controlled by these more slender type reptilian type beings, and he definitely painted a pretty bleak picture. Some cute and cuddly to we're going to harvest your freaking soul.
Yeah, I know. You know,
I think you got a caller in line with it.
That's quite a departure from ET. Yeah, I agree with you.
What was that, Joe?
See, we got a caller. Do we have a caller on the line with us? Hello, caller. Okay.
Do we have a caller?
Call back when you remember. Trust me, all three of us do radio. We understand how these things. Sometimes when okay, real quick story here. Very first time I ever called in Coast, long, many, many moons ago, like 20 years ago, I called in. I was like, because I couldn't believe I got through it. But since then, I have gotten over that. Trust me.
Well,
I call
pretty,
it now.
It's pretty frightening when you realize you're talking to 20 million people.
Yeah, you know, you're like, hey, you know. But I gotta say, I like doing Coast. It's a lot of fun to do Coast.
George is really great.
I've never had the pleasure of being interviewed by Art. I wish he'd come back on the radio. George, I've been interviewed by a few times.
Yeah, George is
really fun this thing.
I keep hearing rumors that Art's coming back, but I think they're just rumors.
He's on my Facebook page, and he's always talking real nice, and he seems to be real happy right now, but he's never talking anything about radio, so I'm not feeling the love there. I don't think he's coming back, but if he does, I'll be listening to him. I love him. I think he's great. Because he just don't take any BS, you know. He's just like, what did you just say? What, huh? Excuse me? What? I love that kind of stuff.
He keeps you on the subject, all right, that's for sure.
Yeah, he does. He's good about that. He's good. You got it. I'm in for a break, Kill. I just thought I'd let you know. Yeah.
So,
hush up a minute, Jerry. Let me talk to them for a minute. Yeah, make Jeff be quiet for a minute. We know he's got a big mouth and all. No, I want to ask you something right quick, because I love speaking on Jeff. I really get to do this, so. But I wanted to ask you, what really made you want to get into this and get involved in this and write books and stuff like that?
Well, I've been investigating these subjects for maybe 20 years, and I've known a lot of people who have been abducted and a lot of people who have looked at this from the metaphysical point of view. Metaphysics is very much involved in all this, and I've always been involved in metaphysics since I first started studying at the Edgar Cayce Library in Virginia Beach. But, it's impossible to understand the extraterrestrial influence without knowing metaphysics, because they have mastered certain powers, powers that are none of us have yet, and that's why they're so mysterious and so difficult to deal with. But once we understand our metaphysical capabilities and our potential, then the whole story changes. The whole story changes, and they can't really hurt us or affect us any. Once the human race comes into its power, its real power, then everything changes. Once we raise our consciousness, the whole problem goes away. And I think to happen. When, I'm not sure. I think the aliens know this, and I think they're afraid of us in a lot of ways.
They're afraid of us in a lot of ways. I don't blame them. You know I love you, Jeff. You know I still love you.
I love you too, Jeff.
Hey, none of that on the air now. You got to keep that for private. y'all don't even write to us about that, okay? I can see emails coming in.
In the night.
We got about 2 minutes, guys. We have callers on the line. We'll just call. You're going to have to hold up.
Even the trailer sheet. So we're a reptilian born in the month of March, be a Pisces, or November, be a Sagittarius.
Well, that's a good question.
Let's use these few minutes to send healing chants to Guy Waddle in the hospital. Hallelujah, motherfuckers. There we go.
Okay. That was some kind of weird ritual thing there, guys. We have 1 minute, 1 minute, 1 minute. Liam, why don't you give me your website now? Because Jeffrey's bad.
Yeah. Liam, we're going to go on break for 10 minutes, and then we'll come back for another hour. What's your website, Liam?
It's www.et-secrethistory. et-secrethistory is the website. And
Greenzy Daddy. All right, everybody, we're going on break. We'll be back shortly, and we'll have that caller, hopefully. And we'll get back on track with some more questions with Lynn and keep the party rolling. Thanks.
That's if Jeffrey left with y'all. Let's see you in a minute.
Living easy, living free. Even take a little one way. Hi there. Got your attention? I'm Gia Scott, and I was curious what you were doing from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time on Tuesdays. See, I host this really interesting little radio program that airs live then, and we bring in all sorts of guests. Authors, experiencers, and everything in between. It's paranormal and guaranteed to make you go, My guest list is always up at www.giascott.com, and do tune in to the Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Are you interested in a radio program that focuses on the deeper aspects of the UFO topic? Would you like to explore the facts and truths of what ufology and UFO research are all about? And please join us here every Saturday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central for Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, with your host, D. Andrew, right here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And remember, UFO research is not a belief system.
Hello, everyone. Trish Sheridan, host of A Global Focus. Come join us each Friday evening at A Global Focus's new time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Come join the discussion.
Light up your night with The Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, I'm psychic medium Chris George.
And I'm Stephanie Vanetti. Psychic medium, are you sure about that, Chris? It's more like psychic extra large.
Yeah, real funny, Vanetti. If any again being my girlfriend, you would know. Together, we are Second Sight NYC, a parapsychic radio show based out of New York City.
Join us each week as we journey into the unknown. Let's cross the threshold of reality together.
We take a fun and no-nonsense approach to our show, and we love to interact with our audience. Each week, you can expect a great guest, interesting topics, and strong opinions by myself and Stephanie.
As well as rapid readings, psychic dream interpretations, and the gemstone of the week. And don't ask us a question that you don't want an answer to.
Give us 2 hours of your time to inform, enlighten, and entertain you. Let the journey begin.
Join us.
The Church of Mabus radio show is now in session. Saturday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern, with high strange scholars teaching us of ufology, the paranormal, and the occult, and the metaphysical. Seek sanctuary with the Dark Reverends, Jeffrey Pritchett and Guy Widell, at www.mabusincarnate.com. Always moshing with the apocalypse. Now get down on your knees and pray!
Hi, this is Rob Simone, and I want to tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
To UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m.
I'm so afraid.
Welcome back to the Church of Mavis with our guest Lynn Caston and our special co-host, Joe Montado. Special. He's so special.
He started that special, man.
Not short, but special. Special.
So, hey guys, the car is calling right off the bat. All right, Carl, you in there with us, Jeffrey?
Okay, good. I am not in another room, so I can talk and not have to be interrupted by my own voice. The question is, reptilians, greys, or any other extraterrestrial or unhuman, I know that dogs and cats do follow astrology, but do they? The being the reptilians and such.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question. What was the question again?
Well, I saw that shell creature outside. Was he a Pisces or was he a Leo? And is that reptilian who chewed my leg off? Is he a Sagittarius or is he a Gemini?
Well,
yeah,
how you would know. What do you think? I don't know how the hell you'd know.
Yeah, birth dates. I guess they had some government by the astrological sign, you know, by astrology. They were born on a certain day.
What do you think, Jeff? I don't know.
First of all, reptilians live to be much, much older than us, than we do.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Try and trace
them on a certain day.
Their birth date would be a difficult thing, I would imagine.
No, it was one day, a specific time, a specific moment.
So you're wanting to know the horoscope of the reptilians?
Exactly. The horoscope, I don't know.
Well, I guess the question is whether or not astrology governs extraterrestrials as well as humans. Is that the question?
Simply put, yes.
Well, you know, the astrological influence is a belt. The zodiac is a belt in the heavens, and I would imagine that that belt also encompasses many, many other star systems. So, which star systems? I don't know, but
it's a perfect belt.
Yeah. So
I'm a Capricorn, and that's supposedly the son of the devil. So,
that's
okay.
Zodiac is not a visible belt. It's an energy belt. That's why you can't see these constellations that affect us. But I imagine that same belt must affect many, many other star systems as well as our own. So it probably does affect them, but I don't know. I wouldn't know how to do it, how it works.
I wouldn't either. I'm not that good at astrology on regular people. I don't know how I could even do it. Thanks for calling in, guys. That lines are open now. I wanted to ask Jeffrey something, too, and I don't know. I forgot. My name brained it, Jeff. I hate when that happens, man.
Senior moment.
Yeah, I know. That's what it is. It is senior moment. You're like, what just happened here? It's interesting. But, okay, Jeff,
I'll be here. So, Lynn, earlier you said that there's been some crimes committed aim of trying to cover up the ET information to the public. What do you mean by that exactly? What crimes?
Well, I don't think anyone doubts anymore that there have been assassinations connected with this. I mean, so many people have reported it. I'm not, and then there's the Men in Black thing, and, you know, they're desperate to keep it undercover, and they'll take whatever means. As a matter of fact, some of the pledges of secrecy that they require from people who are in the inside tell them that if they violate the secrecy oath, that they or their family will be killed. So it's not that much of a secret anymore. That's how serious it is, yeah.
Yeah, it's like kill you, wipe you out, make you never exist kind of stuff. That's why when I hear all these conspiracy people, I'm always like, well, wait, guys, look. I said, I've been threatening myself, and basically they told me, well, you know, blah, 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 your family be driving that high, blah, blah, 18-wheeler, blah, blah, roll over, and that's it. And done over with, no question. It's like, I've said this 100 times. It's like what happened with John Mack, drunk driver hitting. No one even questioned it. To anybody that's talking about the government, nobody even questioned it. 18-wheeler accidentally rolls over the top of him, driver gets killed, driver in the car gets killed, everybody dies. Tragic accident, no big deal. Everyone moves on.
How about Stephen Schiff, the congressman that was trying to get to the Roswell story out? He died of a very mysterious form of aggressive cancer at the age of 51. He never had it before in his life.
That's interesting.
He was getting to be an annoyance.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting you brought the cancer thing up because there's a link in cancer and ufology deaths. It's a weird thing. Several people, government people, other people trying to get outside information, get some type of rare or untreatable cancer and die. I guess when you get to that point, I mean, we've basically been told more than one time, it's in a lot of ways the government endorses what we do. They want the truth out there, but they don't want it out at their expense. So as long as it's not putting them in jeopardy, yeah, they don't care, like you thought, just like you and I, and we're out here talking about something. They don't want that kind of information. They want people educated.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with that completely.
Just not at their expense.
And it's only certain secrets, like Dr. Michael Wolff, who really was an insider and worked with the aliens underground at Area 51. He died very young of a strange form of cancer, and he was convinced that they did him in. But I think he went beyond. I think they warned him and gave him plenty of warning about certain things that he talked about and couldn't talk about. And when he wrote his book, they insisted that he make sure that it was considered to be fiction, which he did. But I think he strayed beyond what they wanted him to talk about. And when that happens, they get angry. You know, that beyond this point, you will not go, is what I think they're saying, basically.
Well, it is. I mean, they told me I've been doing radio for a couple of years. And I was hosting Wake Up USA, and guest came on one night. And actually, it was Alfred Weber, by the way. And he asked me about the alien agenda. And Alfred and I are good friends. You know, we're both New Orleanians, and we're actually quite good friends. And he asked me about an alien. I started talking to him about it. First off, right off the bat, every 15 minutes on the minute, the phone went off. Okay. Not that unstrange for this kind of radio. Stuff like that happens. No big deal. You know, get over it. 2 days later, I'm at work. Got a big crew working on a roof. I'm standing up there with these guys, and all of a sudden I see a white SUV with tinted windows pull up. Two guys get out the side, nice gray Armani suits, beautiful suits, get out of the car, and they start pointing at the roof. So I'm looking around at these guys going, okay, who's in trouble with the fence? And I'm thinking, who the hell's in trouble with the fence? And everybody's like, it ain't us. And a guy kept pointing, put like, come down here. I'm like, who the hell? So I said, let me go see. So I get down, and the whole crew's like, wait, can we come down with you? And somebody else stay up here. I start walking over, and I'm looking at the guy, and, I get this kind of sense of feeling as I'm getting close to him. He unbuttons one button of his jacket, pulls his jacket over one finger, and puts it over the top of his gun so I could see the gun. Looked like a .45, might have been a 9mm, not exactly sure. Standard government-issued gun, ain't no doubt about that. I've seen enough of them to know. So he looks up at me and says, look, we want you to know, we endorse what you do. We back what you do. We want you to understand that you're like one-stop shopping for us. But do not discuss the agenda. And he even said this. This is going to be your only warning. And that's when he went in and started talking about my family. He never actually personally threatened me. He threatened my family.
was like, okay, cool. We can leave the agenda alone and talk about other stuff. And that's what I did. So we'll just leave the agenda alone and move on to other stuff. I mean, I still do a lot of research on it. I'm still discussing private organization. It's discussed in group discussions, but not on the air. It's a simple thing. And as long as they let me do what I want and they're not going to interfere, that's fine. I can abide by limited in.
Right.
But now, isn't everybody talking about the alien agenda? I mean, that was back then. Now, is it okay to talk about the alien agenda? Because it seems like we're talking about the alien agenda now, aren't we?
But they weren't talking about the alien agenda. What the aliens are. They don't care who talks about the alien agenda as long as they don't know what they're talking about, Jeff. The stuff I was talking about was based on a lot of research we've done, conclusions on where all this would actually end up in a lot of ways. That's what they did not want to discuss because it wasn't based on hearsay or one contact. This was based on several thousand contacts. This was a study started with MUFON and finished with ICAR over a 15-year period. No, they didn't want us talking about this. But no way, because it might scare people. It might sound too convincing to some people. And they just wanted left alone, which is fine. They let me do all this abduction research. I mean, come on, we've got the blood type studies out, the gray study out, the human study out, the reptilian study coming out. We've got the personality study. So now you've got blood personality and types of abductions. So most average people can go pick up this data, and they don't even need to know if a person's a contactee. They should be able to tell by reading the data, or just by talking to an individual. So we're changing the way it's going to work for the future. It's just we can leave the alien agenda alone and keep it inside the organization for now. And eventually it won't have a problem with it coming out, and we'll come out with it when it's safe for whoever's going to talk about it.
I think the things they prohibit change over time. Some things that they were dead set against revealing a few years ago, they don't mind revealing anymore because it's just already reached loose and everyone's talking about it anyway. So what's the
point? A lot of it is.
Yeah, exactly. So
a lot of it is, but some of this stuff that we were talking about, now, none of this has even hit the surface. ICAR is generally about 10 years ahead of what comes out on the Internet. You can go back to when I started hosting Wake Up USA and listen to what we were talking about. It's part of what the field is today. But, you know, we've also been around for a while. So for us, it's a little different. We're looking at this going, okay, no one's even touched on these agendas yet. They're just not there yet. Probably like in the back of your head or some other people's heads, it's probably something that's stirring around, but they're not quite ready to come completely public with it because, you know,
exactly.
Could be one of the things that backfires on you.
That's right.
And so that's where we really are right now. And yeah, it's a little safer for people like us who do this. And yeah, I'm getting older, and I'm closer to 50 now, so, you know, maybe when I'm about 70, I might come out and say, oh, yeah, like, no, not Joanne. It's just one of them things. And I do think the government, like you and I were talking a few minutes ago, I think it's more and more stuff. They want us to put more and more out. They want the people, because there can reach a point, the apex, when enough research and enough credible data is put into the field that the government can just say, yeah, you know what, I think y'all are right. And leave it at that. And not have to go back and explain everything else. But that we're not there yet, but you know.
Well, we're not
going to really leave you and I and Alfred and Michael and Stephen alone and just let us do our thing. And then, you know, they, unfortunately for people like us, there's some people out there who were, how can I say this politely, less than credible. They just make us all look bad.
I think a lot of the people dead set against Revelation are dead already anyway. We've got a whole new generation of people in the NSA and the NCIA and MJ-12, which doesn't even exist anymore. So that keeps changing. It's a dynamic situation. And yesterday's disinformation, yesterday's prohibition is today's revelation. So you never know. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think it's going to change a lot more, too. I think a lot more is going to be acceptable to talk about as we see another change in command and government. I was with Stephen. I had high hopes for Obama. I didn't think it would ever happen because I'm a realist, but it's still, you know, I did have high hopes that he would at least try.
I don't think Obama ever intended to reveal. It would really hurt his reputation in the middle ground, you know, within middle America. He just wouldn't do it. I think it would probably destroy his chances for re-election, frankly. If he's ever going to do it, it would have to be in his second term.
Yeah. Well, you know what? This was discussed a long time ago, and there's a lot of evidence to support this, that first-term presidents aren't even told. Because really and truly, when you go back and you look at it, and I've talked with this with Grant Cameron on several occasions, he agrees, When you go back and look, there's only a few presidents that even hint like they may have known. That presidents that have interests like Clinton. You know, here you got the Clinton, she's Secretary of State now, he was president, and they still don't know. They know, but they don't actually know what they want to know, is what I'm trying to say.
Right, yeah.
Carter, he petitioned. Even little Bush petitioned them. But Daddy Bush, he knew. Reagan knew. I don't know who knew before him, maybe Kennedy.
Kennedy was only told just what they needed him to know. He was told about Project Serpo because he was the one that had to give the order for the exchange program. But beyond that, they didn't tell him anything. They didn't tell him that they'd already been reverse engineering alien craft for 9 years prior to Serpo. They never told him that. So he was in the dark on that score. I mean, ever since Eisenhower was the last one to know the whole story. And I don't think even he knew the whole story.
He probably did.
Yeah. I think MJ-12 has decided who gets what. And they're the ones that interface directly with the aliens. Not the government.
Daddy Bush always worried me because he was head of the CIA, 8 years as vice president, 4 years as president, and then his son was president for 8 years. If anybody knows everything, he does.
Right.
He'll never tell us. And I'm sure he told Reagan something, because Reagan had some unique things most people don't realize. He did institute Star Wars. The lasers that were designed for Star Wars were never intended to shoot down missiles. They were way too big and way too hot for that. They were designed for something much bigger. Then he instituted Time Gap, the Joint British Defense of Outer Space. And then he made his historical speech about if aliens invaded us. So he makes a speech and then he institutes two programs for the defense of Earth from outer space invasion. The new laser defense shield and the Joint British Pine Gap. And it even tells you in their mandate that it's a defense from outer space. Not inside the moon range, from outer space. So he knew
something.
There's
no question that Star Wars was about alien defense. I agree with you on that entirely.
And apparently he thought there was a problem there because he was trying to defend us. You know, it's not like he thought the aliens were all loving, kissing, sweetie kind of things. He was worried about it.
Colonel Corso had the same attitude. He thought they were trying to take over. Yeah, right after Roswell. He said that right in his book. So I think that there's a common strain there within the military that does truly believe that there is a very hostile group of aliens that we need to defend ourselves against. And that group could very well be the reptilians. I don't know. But they're not all friendly, that's for sure.
Well, out of all the aliens that we do research on, the tall humans, the ones they say look closest to us, even though they really don't, they're the vicious ones. The Sumerians talk about them first. Some Sumerians say they were vicious.
Are you talking about the Pleiadians?
Well, all we do is call them human aliens. We don't give them a name because, frankly, all the aliens we've talked about don't communicate in a voice way. Their language would not translate into any words known on this planet today. So we leave stuff like Pleiadians alone because we don't really think that's what it really is. Because really and truly, the way they communicate and the way they do things, it wouldn't come off to us like that. We named it the Pleiades. It wouldn't be their home planet's name or their home with. If they were telling us, it would be a much different type of name. So that's something humans did. So I'm always real leery when I hear stuff like that.
How many questionnaires have you actually received in total?
Okay, on the grays, we're probably up around 1,000 now. On the reptilians, a couple hundred. On the humans, there was three studies done on the humans. The first one was done from a friend of ours down in Argentina. He did about 1,500 reports. He correlated them and sent them to us. It's something actually we put up on the website sometime in the next month, by the way. And then we've done another 300 since then, and then before it goes public, they'll probably be up around 6. So it's going to be representing about 2,100 contactees on that. Now, on top of all of this, you've got ICAR's initial, on top of all this, you've got MUFON's initial data that I did with them 20 years ago when I was with them. We did it. We found about 4,200 people who claimed to be contactees, and we sent them out all questionnaires back then. And we took that and arranged the original abduction criteria. And since then, we've added probably 8,000 or 10,000 on top of that. And then on top of that, we've got the case studies now with the questionnaires. So when we're talking about abductions, we're talking about this. There's no one ever done what we're doing, ever. If you combined all the abduction researchers in the field, they would even touch what we're doing. They wouldn't even have the case level. And it's been a massive thing. There's a lot of people in the organization that's working. We just, matter of fact, they just brought Neil Good on yesterday as our Hong Kong international director. And another exopolitics gentleman. You know, my boy out of Germany, who's another exopolitics on board with it as well as a director. So, you know, we're bringing everybody into this because, frankly, there's so much data coming in right now that we need everybody we can get on. The only thing we ask is we make everybody sign a non-disclosure agreement. So it's not that we're trying to keep the information, you know, the information from getting out. We just don't want the people who are giving us the information, names being made public or ruin somebody's life.
I know.
Yeah, that's where we are right now. We work hard, man.
How many of your people, all of these questioners, talk about the hybrid? How many of them have talked about the hybrid program? Any of them at all?
Almost all of them.
Oh, okay, good. I wasn't sure about that. So they all basically knew about it then. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, actually, there's a couple of hybrid programs they talk about. There's the one that, like you and I were talking about earlier, the human gray, the big human gray. There's like a gray reptilian, a gray human, and not a gray us kind of human, but the alien human. Gray seem to have created hybrids with a couple of races, with us being the latest addition to what they're doing.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And inside of that, there's supposedly being hybrids made from those groups with each other. So there's some pretty serious hybrids out there.
The second and third generation hybrids also, too, so they oversee those as well.
Yeah.
Second and third generations. This was covered with Spielberg's series Taken, the TV series. He got into that, and that was about 10 years ago. So it's a pretty broad, very, very broad program, from my understanding. And it's ongoing, is it not? Is it still ongoing?
Yeah, well, actually, all the case studies will go on for life. We'll never take them down. As long as I can afford to keep the sites up, we will leave them there.
It's a hybrid program.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they're still running. As far as I can tell, there's at least four hybrid programs. And a lot of people say, you know, we were talking about the rogue aliens earlier, like the reptilians and the greys. They say there's a rogue hybrid program that's separate, that runs outside of everything else. And even some humans are involved in it. There's so much going on here that, I don't know, man. I don't know if we'll ever get to that.
Well, you know what amazes me is I seem to have been the only one to cover it in my book. I mean, I don't know of any other books that are even talking about it. I knew about it, and I knew I had to devote a chapter to it, but I can't find anyone else even talking about it anywhere.
Most people are scared to talk about it. Most people don't want to talk about it. Yeah, but the hybrid program is a serious thing that needs to be discussed more often. Jacobs may have kind of talked about it once or twice. I really didn't. Bud, I mean, I know some of Bud's contactees, because Bud and I share contactees. There's about five of his that are five of ours that came and met me and are now work with us. And I'm actually quite good friends with a lot of them.
Well, Dr. Mack definitely talked. John Mack talked about it.
Yeah.
And
he talked about it as well. So,
you've
got to be careful with it. You've got to be careful. I mean, they're not going to mind like you and I talking about hybrids because it's out there. But if we get into any real detail about the hybrids, yeah, then you're running a risk. If you just start discussing what some of the hybrids can do and what you're really about, you're running the risk. They might not care, they might.
Well, you know, I looked at your website, and you really got some very comprehensive material out there. It's really amazing stuff.
Well, we're holding back a lot right now, Lynn, because we're in the middle of a remodel.
Oh, really?
A lot of this data study stuff's coming out over the next 2 months because we decided... I don't know why we decided, but we decided we're going to remodel this 278-page website.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
All together, that's how many pages are there, 278. I'm like, oh, why the hell did we do this? And it's still good. You know, like Linda Leslie and Randy Copen's Millab stuff over there. There's a lot of good stuff there. But, you know, and when I get a chance to read your book, I'll see if we can include some of that there as well.
That'd be great. I appreciate that.
I wish Jeff would write a book.
Yeah.
All right, Lynn, a question. What do you mean by a breathtaking vision of a planetary revolution just around the corner? What do you mean by that exactly? And describe that and the final outcome of that.
Yeah, I did put a chapter in there about Andy Perro and the Super Soldier program. I think you may have read that chapter. I think that as the human race starts to expand consciousness, everything will change. The only reason that we're subjected to any of this any of this alien influence at all is because we haven't yet reached our full potential. Once we reach our full potential, we can create a utopia here on this planet, and no other species can interfere with it. We'll have support from all the good guys in the galaxy, and we'll be part of the Galactic Federation. But until we can reach that point, which I'm calling breathtaking, because it would, you know, we're being pushed around by a lot of different groups. We'll be telepathic. We'll be superhuman. The Andy Peril story is just the beginning of what's possible. So that's basically what I was making reference to.
So what exactly is the Andy Peril story, if you can get into that a bit?
Andy Peril was created by the military. He developed superhuman capabilities, and they used him for assassinations until he finally said, no, that's it, I'm not going to do any more of this. And he got deprogrammed and started talking about it and writing about it. So the chapter in my book that discusses him is, I'm trying to think now, it's a chapter called Man and Superman. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, the military has been developing the Super Soldier program because they've discovered what humans are capable of, and they know how to, develop it. And they start right. They start with genetics and the mother and the father, and they work from there. So it's, as I said, just the tip of the iceberg of where the human race is really headed. And once we get, it will be truly breathtaking.
I saw in your book something to the effect, I believe, of Hellbop. And you said Hellbop, the comet triggered change. If you could, can we compare and contrast Hellbop to Comet Elenin? Because, as we know, Hellbop, of course, spawned a lot of lunacy on some levels, and maybe some that wasn't, but Elenin seems to be doing the same thing. I mean, there's so many views on Elenin right now. Some of them are completely, to me anyway, completely way out there. And then there's part of me that just thinks Elenin is just a comet and that's supposedly fading away right now. But, of course, then you have Hoagland. We've done a show on his views of Elenin. And I'm kind of curious how you feel about Hellbop triggering a change compared to Elenin, and what do you think about Elenin?
Well, I think Hellbop was a harbinger of things to come. It was the beginning. I think Hellbop was the beginning, and I think it was talked about in prophecy, and I made reference to Kay's book about the prophetic appearance of a comet in the sky, and it was a very, very bright comet. Now, Elenin, according to Alfred, I'll read to you what he says about Elenin. It's a natural celestial body, a small comet, but made up of more rock than ice and gas, and he says it literally clears the way for the arrival of Tacoma, a brown dwarf about the size of Uranus, trailing behind it. So that's Weber's take on this. I don't think there was really much to the whole Elenin thing at all. And I think I agree with him. It's just a small comet. What influence it had or it will have, I have no idea. And I don't think it will trigger any Earth changes at all. If there are going to be any Earth changes, it's going to come from Planet X. And that, of course, is a whole different story.
Well, I mean, the whole view on Elenin, which I don't agree with from Hoagland, is it's some kind of spaceship, you know, and it's protected by ships and all this bizarre stuff. And that's what I think. I think it's just a comet, and people are just taking it out of context to complete.
Well, I think they've built it up deliberately to be something more important, to take the emphasis off of the real problem, which is Planet X. And that's really the scary one. So,
that's Joe's favorite topic, Planet X.
Oh, God, I'm not even talking about Planet X.
Planet X was the planet discussed by Sitchin in the 12th planet, Nibiru. And
he had a bad translation.
What's that?
No, since I had really, because I used to follow his work a lot now because I was really into all of this, and then I had read the translation he had read, and then there's a translation, a lot of the Sumerian stuff had been retranslated, to make a long story short, and what they would call him Planet X translates into a ship, not into a planet. When you do the literal translation, it actually means a ship, not a planet. And it does discuss being in orbit around Earth. It actually discusses it being around roughly the size of our moon in orbit with Earth. And so since that came out, I've always been kind of leery about anything to do with Planet X after that, because, you know, I was like everybody else before that. I was kind of like, wow. It's, you know, because there's no doubt there could be other planets out there. We find shit all the time. And,
well, I mean, are you discussing Sitchin's definition of the 12th planet? Because Nibiru is four times the size of Earth. So,
Five times the size of Earth.
So this is no small thing here, and it's going to cause the Earth to what they're saying now is going to cause the Earth to go through a polar shift, which would be cataclysmic.
But Sitchin missed some stuff. He missed the fact that the asteroid field between Jupiter and Earth would be five times the size of Earth. Any mass that size approaching near Earth, whether from bottom side or top, Saturn and Jupiter would rip it apart. They would just literally rip it apart, and it would create an asteroid field. And lo and behold, if we don't have one. So I've always been a little iffy about this because I have a good grasp of physics, and I really understand how it works. And for a planet that size to be, whether it's rogue or not, or outside of the plane of elliptical, that doesn't matter. Any way it would go, to get close to Earth, Jupiter's gravity would grab it. It would grab it because it's the size. Mars is not big enough so Jupiter can kind of buffer against it, but a size, something five times the size of Earth, Jupiter would snatch it up and crush it. I mean, literally crush it.
That's
so unless it's a ship, it's not going to work physics-wise.
Well, you know, there are people that claim that they photographed it and there is something behind the sun and it's already becoming evident that it's there. I don't know. You know, if you go out to the Zeta website, www.zetatalk.com, they've got thousands of pages on the effects of Planet X and the very, very details. Where's all that coming from?
I know Nancy Leader quite well. I've actually interviewed Nancy Leader.
Oh, is she the real thing or not? What's your opinion of Nancy?
I think she's a contactee, but I think she's like most of them. She gets this, they make this thing in their head because it's so much to understand and it's so far beyond regular human understanding that they build a world around the contact. And it's not a real world, it's just to give them that sense of they understand and its completion. Most contactees will never understand what the aliens are up to. It's simply beyond most contactees' understanding level. And when they get into this kind of stuff, and it's not that there couldn't be another planet out there. The problem is there's certain basic physics you can't get away from. There's an Oort cloud surrounding this solar system, completely surrounding this solar system. So anything that big would leave a massive hole through the middle of it. Besides that, there is the asteroid field, and then there are several large planets much bigger than five times the size of it. That's the reason there isn't a bunch of rogue shit except for comets in our solar system, because those planets have already cleared mess and have set the orbital path of the planet. More importantly than anything else, any planet five times the size of Earth coming inside of Jupiter's orbit would crush us. We wouldn't exist anymore. Neither would Mars, neither would Venus. They would be gone. The gravitational tie between the Sun, Jupiter, and the fifth planet, the big planet, would kill us all. There would be nothing left. This is just basic physics. This isn't anything, you know, and I've actually talked to several physicists about this as well. I can name three of them right off the top, including Michio Kaku about it on the air. It's just, there's no way a planet that size could get close enough to Earth for what Sitchin and Zeta and them talk about it. It's a physical impossibility.
It's not that one
couldn't come flying through the solar system. It's just it couldn't do what they're saying it's doing. So that's why I've always been kind of like.
I agree with you. I think the physics are there, but there's so much material out about it that, you know, you have to wonder where is it all coming from.
But you know about the red dwarf, right? You know about the red dwarf galaxy. That's where a lot of this material is coming from. They're mistaken. There's a galaxy that's been being gobbled up by the Milky Way for, I don't know. It's Sagittarius, I believe, for about half a billion years. It's been gobbling this up. Well, it's one of the things raising the temperature in the neighboring solar systems is because it's gobbling this up. It's also creating a gravitational tide. Another thing that's interesting about this, in the last decade, there's a new theory out that our solar system may belong to that galaxy. We may not even be native to the Milky Way.
Yeah, I know. I read that.
Because, we're in the neighborhood. And if that's true, that might be why the interest in aliens have always had such an interest in this particular area. And we're all way out on the spiral, on.
So, Joe, do you feel that there will be a planetary polar shift or not?
I think there's going to be some kind of major shift. And I don't think, you know what, I think about this a lot, to be honest with you. And I think, I'm not sure if it's going to be a physical shift or if it's just going to be an outright mental shift. Sometimes I think there might be something physical, just flip the planet around. But then some of the stuff makes me think that it would misdiagnose it again. It's going to be more like, it's going to be more like someone just took everybody's brains and just flipped them over. It's not just a new way of thinking, but a new way of feeling. I don't even know how to explain it.
It might just be a magnetic shift.
It might be, but it might be more intense than anything the planet's experienced before. But it's hard to say because, a pole shift can happen. Most people get confused when they hear pole shift because most pole shifts are just a magnetic field flipping around, which won't hurt us at all. But there can actually be a physical flip. I think it's happened once that I can remember hearing about. So that can cause catastrophic, earthquakes.
What do you think will happen in 2012, Joe?
Oh, I don't think that's going to happen in 2012. Okay, let me rephrase that. Not in the sense that everybody thinks. I don't think it's going to be a physical thing in 2012 because everybody I've ever talked to in South America tells me the same thing about the Mayans. They said if you interpret it literally, the 2012 prophecies literally, it means the end of life as we know it and the start of the Golden Age. Okay, catastrophic disaster is not going to start the Golden Age. Maybe 1,000 years from now or 100 years from now it might start a golden age, but not right then and there. So what can actually trigger the end of life as we know it and the start of the golden age? Well, extraterrestrials come in here and say, hey, guess what, guys, we're here and we're going to try to work with y'all. Okay, that's different. That means our whole way of thinking has just now changed, and there is a golden age because they are supplying us with technologies and stuff like that. That could actually happen, whether it's in 2012, 2025, or whenever. That could actually trigger the golden age. So if you take the Mayans to what they said, there's really only one or two explanations. Holy bitty. I think a lot of times when people overthink some of this stuff, I think some of it's more basic than people think about.
There's so many opinions out there. Plus, a lot of these groups are just fear-mongering, basically. I think that if you can get millions of people or billions of people into a state of fear, they sort of thrive on that, and they sort of absorb that fear, and I think a lot of this is simply fear-mongering, getting people worked up about what could happen to
them. I agree.
So, and that lowers the consciousness. And basically, keeping the consciousness low, I think, is their goal. Because, as I said before, as the human race grows and expands consciousness, we're through with everything. I mean, none of it's going to matter anymore once we reach that point.
Yep.
And I don't think they want that to happen.
Not right now. I think you're right. I think they want us... They might let us achieve that in the future somewhere along the line. And I've said this on the air before, and I think this is important for humans to realize. If it's true what the Sumerians, everybody says, that means we are part grade, part reptilian, part human. Okay, alien and us. So one day, maybe 1 million years, maybe 100 million years, we will become the masters because we will simply evolve our masters. Because by them combining all their DNA and us, sooner or later, we're going to out-evolve them. It's just a matter
absolutely,
of time.
Absolutely.
So they know that.
Yeah, the potential of the human race is incredible. I think it's incredible.
And I think they know it, and I think they're going to hold us back as long as they can.
Exactly.
They want to keep dominating the universe, and I think they will. And it's not, ladies and gentlemen, this is not going to happen tomorrow, okay? We may have a flip in consciousness next year. That any time that's possible. And the overall grand scheme of things does evolve, and we'll probably talk anywhere from 1 million to 100 million years, but for the greatest challenge, we're practically forever. And the reptilians and humans live a damn long time, so... this is nothing for them. 1 million years, 100 million years. Their races have been around longer than that.
Exactly.
So they're much more patient than we are. So I do think that's what's going to happen eventually. I just maybe in one of my new reincarnations will be a more enlightened.
The interesting thing about the Mayans is they were only around for 300 years, from 600 to 900, and yet their calendar begins with 3000 BC. And you have to wonder. They must have had an ET connection to have gotten all that information and put that into their calendar. They didn't come up with that themselves. No way.
Oh, no, I agree. There's no way they came up with that stuff. I was kind of like, there's a lot of stuff in the past. I'm kind of like, no way, this is not natural development. Not that I think humans are dumb. I think that we do figure out a lot of stuff on our own. But I do think from time to time there's a little nudge here and a little nudge there. It's like splitting the atom. I think the overall splitting the atom was us, and we even surprised the aliens a little bit. That's why they're like, oh, shit. Now they can play with nukes. Damn it.
Yeah. Well, have you been watching Ancient Aliens, the show on...
I love Ancient Aliens. I love Ancient Aliens.
Okay.
I noticed, though, truthfully, first Giorgio's hairstyles are changing each week. What the hell is up with that? I'm going to have to write to him, man.
Well, you know, Giorgio was talking about swords and developing magic swords last night, and I think he goes off on a tangent every once in a while and into some strange hinterlands, you know?
Yeah, there's everyone in hair.
Excalibur.
Yeah. Yeah, you got about 12 minutes if y'all want to call in, so.
Yeah, let's get some calls in, maybe. That's right. Let's get some calls. Anybody want to call in? Got a question?
Well, I hope there wasn't nobody calling because I was talking with Lennon and forgot to look at the screen. So if you have called in, I apologize. I've been reading the text instead of watching the phone lines. Bad on me.
Yeah. I don't think
so. So you have Kale and Fire next year, Peace and Light, or maybe what the alien says that Bond will get reelected and we'll all have a cardiac or something. Maybe that's what's funny. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. I'll behave now. I know that's Jeff's hero. I'm sorry, Jeff.
Jeff, did you have other questions about the book that you wanted to ask?
Well, I had a question that kind of fit into religion. Do you think any of these beings are going to try to play out some of these end-time scenarios, like Revelations, you know, the return of the gods, the creator? Because there's so many people that would just bow down and totally kiss their ass and do whatever they said. Do you ever think any of these beings are going to be that ballsy to come back and act like God?
That's possible, but I think a more important question would be this supposed false flag invasion. It seems to be that the military is building up to this notion that we're going to be invaded by the aliens, and there seems to be a lot of propaganda coming into the consciousness lately about a so-called alien invasion, and they seem to be serious about trying to pull this off. Alfred Weber talks about it in great detail, but the latest news from him is that they've given up on that. And that was the reason that Reagan brought it up in the first place, and MacArthur brought it up, because they want to pull off, you know, this whole thing about an alien invasion. I don't know what their motive would be to do that, except to perhaps impose martial law, which could very well be their goal. So I think that's probably a more important question than the religious one, because... you know, people are being drawn away from religion right now, more and more. And according to the latest polls, there's fewer and fewer people that belong to any religion anymore. So I don't know what effect any kind of religious thing would have on us at all.
And how do you feel about the recent Cliff Clifford statement about UFO sightings increasing? And he said he didn't know if it was a glitch in it or whatever. Do you think UFO sightings? Joe and Lynn, have they increased lately or decreased?
I think the aliens are going to reveal themselves soon. I think there will be a mass revelation, and I'm not sure when it will happen, and it could be that the number of sightings increasing is just a prelude to that, and that's just a build-up to it. I think more and more sources are
Hello?
Hi. Yeah, I have a question.
Are you there?
Yeah, that was weird. Thank you. I don't know what happened. Hey, Carl's calling in. I was going to grab both of them, but the system decided not to behave there. Sorry, I'm not sure what happened there, guys. It was a kind of a weird, kind of strange, glitchy thing there. That's what you call an intervention.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It happens.
That was weird. The way that went down, hold on, let me see if I can grab this caller right. Hello? Okay, caller, you should be in the queue with this caller. Oh, turn your mic off or your talk off or something. Ow. What?
What?
This is weird. You gotta turn off your talk off. You gotta mute it. Great, I'm getting a feedback. There you go.
Oh, hey.
There you go.
I just have a question for you, Joe, if you don't mind. You were talking about the Greys and reptilians and the humans, and that eventually we'll be, I guess, their masters or something when we evolve. Why don't they just kill us off?
Because they don't want to do that. That's not what they're after. The Greys don't really fear us. I mean, it's not that. They want us to evolve. They just want to just have the sandbox longer. How's that? They're not quite ready to give it up to us. And frankly, we're not going to be ready for it. I'm sure Len would agree for quite some time.
They don't really have a free. There is such a thing as non-intervention, and I think that they have to obey that dictum. It comes from way, way above them, and they can't change that.
Yeah, and they would agree with that. As slaves, they'd rather use the slaves than kill us, I'm sure, or something. What do they call us, containers? We're just containers?
I don't have a lot of minutes, so I'm going to have to get off, but thank you for answering my question, and have a nice day.
Yeah. Thank you for calling in. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, when you call in, make sure you have your radio off or your Power Talk off. If you have it on, of course, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get feedback. Plus, I'm sure me and Jeff and Lynn now have ear damage.
I thought the mother shield was contacting us.
Unfortunately, there's no control over that for us coming in. But I'm glad when any call is coming in. I always love callers calling in. So, first, you just sent me an item. You can call in that line. It's clear. We still got about 5 or 10 minutes because, you know, we kind of lost a little time there. I want to hear more about Lynn's book. Now I'm having to get the damn book. You know, like I don't have enough books now.
The book you can buy the book through the website www.et-secrethistory. It tells you book. You can buy it from the publisher or Amazon or Barnes and Noble. It's available at most of the bookstores, as a matter of fact. So,
well, Jeff said he was going to buy me a copy. So,
okay.
I got a copy for edition.
The book is now at number 14 on the publisher's top 50 list. So it's doing quite well, and
it's an excellent book, and it has great art by Jim Nichols in it. The art's really cool too.
Yeah, and I'm getting good reviews. I've gotten good reviews from Nick Pope, Steve Bassett, Paul Davids, and quite a few others. So they seem to like it.
What's your next book, Len?
Expanding the whole chapter 23 about Project Circle.
What is that? Where was feedback? Caller, turn down your mic or something. Your power talk, whatever that is.
Hello?
Oh, there you go. Jeff?
Yes, Jeff. Hey.
Pretty good.
You're doing pretty good.
Good. Having a great show tonight so far. Love it.
Thanks.
Hey, this is Chip from My Cemetery, man. Hopefully, guys feeling a lot better here soon.
Yeah, you too. Real guys feeling good. Well, Jeff said he can only host with me so much, I make him crazy.
Fantastic. The only question I had for Lynn was, how many governing conferences are there out there in the galaxy? How many governing councils are there in the galaxy?
Well, I can't answer that question with authority, but I do know that there's something called the Galactic Federation of Light, and supposedly that consists of about 200,000 civilizations, and that seems to be the one we're most involved with. That's all I can tell you. And that's hearsay, of course. I don't have any direct knowledge. But There's a lot of information out there floating around. Sheldon Neidl, F-E-L-E, is the main source of that information.
That's weird. Well, we love to call it. That's weird. Skype's a little weird tonight, too.
Jennifer, let's talk about the alien agenda.
That's weird. We got a little weird feedback there.
A lot of feedback.
All right. Well, we're at the tail end now. Hello?
Hello?
Hey guys, y'all still there? Sorry about that. I'm going to be jumping back on with us in just a second. Something died to say that wasn't pretty. E.T. love you long time. You see me, love to me, man. Let's see. I'll see almost every number down there. They would love that.
Hello,
Jeffrey. Welcome back. I think we got hacked on Skype just now. I'm not 100% sure, but it sure acted like it.
Yeah, it was acting really weird.
I got Lynn coming back with him in just a second. I don't know what happened there, ladies and gentlemen. That was a very strange thing. The last call, I was all gone. I don't know. It was just weird. Could be just Skype technology being flaky, but you never know.
Right there.
So, Jeff, what's this? I hear you're pregnant, man.
Hey, Lynn, welcome back. Sorry about that. We got a whole bunch of it. Look like I told Jeff, it looks like we got hacked there, man.
Yeah, I got cut off there. All of a sudden, I had a dial tone.
What I had.
Yeah, it was very weird.
So did I. I am pregnant. Joe asked me if I was pregnant.
Alien baby,
I have an alien fetus, and it's JoJo's the father.
Oh, I heard it was Guy, man. I know the truth. I heard it was Guy. Y'all don't try to pawn it off of me. I heard the truth.
We'll say Aaron.
Oh, Lord, the sickos are loose today.
I'm going to pop out of my stomach and go, Jojo, Jojo, Jojo.
Yeah, happy early Halloween, everyone.
Oh, Lord.
So, guys, I know we've got to get out of time here, but I've been having a blast tonight. I say, Jeff, thanks for inviting me on. Lynn, very nice to meet you, man.
Same here, Joe. Same here. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed our talk. And
what's your site again, Lynn?
Yeah. I'm sorry?
What's your website again before we leave?
It's www.et-secrethistory.com. And out there, you can buy the book through the website, through Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And there's also a lot of other interesting stuff out there. I've got five of my articles that I wrote for Atlantis Rising magazine. Over the last 14 years, I've written 52 articles for Atlantis Rising. And I've got five of them out there on the website that may be of interest to people. One of them is on the free energy, which I think will interest a lot of people. So, plus a lot of videos and stuff that will be of interest to people. So, check it out.
All righty. Well, we appreciate you doing the show. Had a great time with Joe and you. And just want to say, everybody, keep Guy in your prayers. And hopefully he'll be back next weekend. I don't really know. And our next guest for next Saturday is Timothy Wiley, Return of the Rebel Angels, Urantia, something about Rebel Angels saying that God forgave them and they're canceling Armageddon. So, alrighty then. We'll see how that goes. But that's next week. Everybody, thanks for listening.
Wow, what the hell was that? Oh, hey, Skype is just freakity weird tonight, people. I'm not sure what's going on tonight, but Jeff is out there for listening. I'm going to let it go now, and kind of wonder what's been going on with this. Hey, hello, everybody. Now the show's over. Hey, what's up, people?
I'm Gia Scott, and I was curious what you were doing from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time on Tuesdays. See, I host this really interesting little radio program that airs live then, and we bring in all sorts of guests. Authors, experiencers, and everything in between. It's paranormal and guaranteed to make you go, My guest list is always up at www.giascott.com, and do tune in to the Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Are you interested in a radio program that focuses on the deeper aspects of the UFO topic?
Light up your night with The Kevin Smith Show.